Welcome to the Savvy Shrink Podcast, brought to you by MHNRnetwork.com. I'm your host, Andrea Schneider. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, therapist, and life coach. I will be sharing helpful information for individuals dealing with varying mental health challenges, ranging from trauma and loss to recovering from toxic relationships in love, work, and family, specifically as relates to narcissistic abuse recovery. Other poignant topics will include maternal mental health and special needs parenting, among others. The podcast welcomes guests who share their expertise in trauma-informed and evidence-based interventions, including the latest in neuropsychology. My ebook, Soul Vampires: Reclaiming Your Lifeblood After Narcissistic Abuse, is available at BookBaby and other digital online booksellers. I'm a believer in a strengths-focused perspective for my clients, which harnesses the power of internal wisdom and crafting the inner alchemy of healing. Please grab a cup of coffee or tea, and welcome to The Savvy Shrink. The Savvy Shrink is honored to have Laura Navarro-Pickens here today. She is a licensed clinical social worker specializing in individual couples and group psychotherapy in the fields of postpartum mood disorders, perinatal loss, and trauma. She maintains a private practice in the cities of Newport Beach and Long Beach, California, and is a consultant with Hoge Hospital in Orange County. She provides consultation services as well as support groups, and her practice focuses on postpartum stress and depression, as well as infertility, trauma, pregnancy loss, and infant death. Welcome, Laura.
Thank you for joining us. And please let our listeners know about your practice specialty with perinatal loss. Can you tell us what perinatal loss is and what you do to help those that have perinatal loss?
Perinatal loss, as I see it, I kind of look at it from a kind of a larger perspective. There's kind of the medical terminology around what perinatal loss is, but I sort of look at it a little bit more globally. Perinatal loss is really the loss of a baby or loss of a pregnancy anytime during the pregnancy or in the neonatal period. So that would be considered like first trimester miscarriage, second trimester loss, whether that would be a miscarriage or a stillbirth. And then if a baby dies also during labor and delivery or a little bit afterward. So that's what perinatal loss is. And what I do is I work with moms and dads, really the family, but moms with postpartum depression, postpartum anxiety, other kinds of mood disorders, psychosis. I see a lot of people, a lot of women who have depression during pregnancy or anxiety during pregnancy. I think we think of, like I'm sure you've talked about on your podcast before, that, you know, we sort of see depression or we see the pregnancy period as just like this glorious time and this amazing time. But a lot of women really struggle because there's so much going on hormonally and with their brain chemistry.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I also see a lot of women who have birth trauma. And I did listen to Dr. Carly Snyder the last time you had her on. And I loved her perspective on birth trauma, that it's really not about how traumatic maybe a caregiver sees the birth experience, but it's really about the mom's perspective of what her experience was.
Absolutely.
And also birth trauma. Yeah. And birth trauma can be really also very difficult for the partner. So let's just say the dad in the situation to see a traumatic birth experience, to see their partner go through it and to be scared and to feel totally out of control. That's one of the scariest things for men for sure. Let's see. I see a lot of women when they have what we call subsequent pregnancy to their losses. So after they've had a pregnancy loss, a stillborn baby, and then they become pregnant afterwards, and just helping them navigate the ups and the downs of that pregnancy and helping them navigate having moments of joy and having moments of hope, but also feeling really afraid and that something might happen with this baby. And then also there's that topic of parenting after loss. I help parents after they've had a loss. You know, when you've had a loss of a child, you can become very overprotective very easily because you know bad things can happen, and trying to kind of balance out those things. And I also see women and men when they've had fertility issues or terminations after they've had a difficult fetal diagnosis, like the baby is very, very ill. And then also like loss in multiples, like if a mother is pregnant with multiples, but maybe she's lost one, or one's in the NICU and one maybe didn't make it. So those kinds of situations. So that's what I do.
That's incredible. Wow. You provide such a broad range of services for the childbearing. Remarkable how this is quite common in terms of perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. We know that potentially up to 20% of all childbearing women experience that, in addition to their significant others, they're at risk as well. But in terms of perinatal loss, that's also a real unique subspecialty underneath that umbrella. And it's just wonderful that people can find you out in Orange County and you know of your services. So it's wonderful to have you here and just very excited to hear more about your expertise. And feel free to talk about anything as relates to perinatal mood and anxiety disorders, childbearing, et cetera. And in terms of perinatal loss specifically, I also work with a lot of moms who have gone through miscarriage or stillbirth, or maybe they're trying to get pregnant again after having a miscarriage. And like you said, there's a lot of anxiety connected with that. How common is perinatal loss? Do you know the statistics? And what is the likelihood of a woman having a miscarriage or potential stillbirth?
Yeah, so, you know, what we know is that a miscarriage is kind of a common situation. Now, that doesn't mean that it's common and we can say, oh, it's common, no big deal that it happened to you. I had a client once say in my support group, it was so amazing. She said, you know, cancer is also really common, but we don't say like, oh, well, you have cancer. It's just really common, no big deal. And I thought, I love that. That was such a, I thought, really profound thing to say. That so miscarriage, really, one in four women will experience a pregnancy or infant loss in her life. So that includes a early miscarriage, or it can go all the way to infant loss. So that it runs really the gamut. But stillborn babies are really 1% of all pregnancies. Based on the CDC, it says that 24,000 babies in the U.S. are born still. I think that there used to be image of stillborn babies are alive and then they pass away during the labor and delivery, but that's not really the case. Really, the majority of stillborn babies really pass before the labor and delivery starts. A lot of women will just feel sort of less fetal activity, or just feel something strange, something not right, and then they'll go in to their OB and they have no fetal movement, no fetal heartbeat. Or they go in for a regular scheduled appointment at the end of their pregnancy and something has happened. That's really what we consider sort of the stillborn situation.
Okay.
And also, when I was looking at the statistics last night, what was really also interesting to me is that stillbirth is 10 times, there's 10 times as many stillborn babies as there are deaths of babies due to SIDS or sudden unexpected infant death syndrome. And I think that that's really, really remarkable, right? So there's a lot of money that goes into SIDS and SUID research, but not so much into the stillbirth community. So that's something that we need to take a look at, because it's more common.
Oh, that's good information. It really sounds like it's much more common than we realize, and that certainly when women and their families are going through such a vulnerable period, they absolutely need access to information on how to help them and where to go to get support. So it's fantastic. There are people like you that really know how best to address this very, very unique form of loss that is at a very vulnerable time in a woman's life and family development. So it brings about its own unique constellation of grief work. And I think it's also something that it's like a form of disenfranchised grief, where a lot of people feel there's a tremendous amount of stigma connected to even acknowledging losing a baby, whether it's through stillbirth or miscarriage. It's sort of like people just don't talk about it. And, you know, the woman and her significant other, if she has one, often bear a tremendous amount of sadness and grief on their own while not sharing it with others. And that isolation can be incredibly difficult. And I know I've been very privileged to be able to hear you speak at a training with the Motherhood Consortium, and I learned so much from that presentation. But if you could also share with our listeners what interventions are available for parents in this situation, if they sustain a perinatal loss, what do you do? And how is that unique to grief work specifically?
Well, I think, you know, you made a really super important point, which is that parents oftentimes feel like very, very isolated, like they are the only ones who this has happened to. Because really, if you can imagine, you know, I'm kind of talking clinically and statistically, but if you can really kind of sink down into the experience of an actual parent who's going through it, you know, you are having, I mean, my clients, they have healthy, healthy pregnancies. They are physically active. They're eating well. They're eating organic. They're doing all the things that they're supposed to do. And they're going in like, I have control over this. I'm going to have a healthy pregnancy. I'm going to have a healthy baby. Everything's going to be amazing. And then all of a sudden, they get the most shocking and terrible news, excruciating, painful news that they've ever had in their lives. And you go through such a shock. And so, like, how can this, I've never heard of this before. I don't know anyone who this has happened to before. Plus, because we don't really talk about miscarriage too much, or people say, you know, don't announce your pregnancy till 12 weeks. People are having these silent sorrows by themselves, and they feel so isolated to go through it, and they feel like, what did I do to cause this? What I'm sure I had to do something wrong. And they go through this whole huge series of feelings that are super normal to have, but super painful to have. And not necessarily, I don't want to say that it's not correct that they have them, but they're really not right feelings. To feel like I could have done something, really that's not the case. It's not a case where patients have done something to cause this. This is a situation where this happens. We don't really understand the full range of why it's happening. Sometimes we understand, but even when the baby has had an autopsy, there's really no explanation as to why this kind of thing happened. That's why we sort of need to research it more, but that's huge. So when parents come in and get help in whatever way that is, whether that's that they go to a support group that they find locally, hopefully in their communities, they go to a bereaved parent support group where other people have also lost their babies, and they can be with other parents. That is very helpful to be able to know that they're not alone, and to also hear what other people are doing to kind of manage the world, you know, sort of the quote unquote normal world while they're not feeling normal at all. Mm-hmm. So there's that. They also, hopefully if couples or individual counselor to deal with the traumatic grief. And then they also have community organizations, you know, maybe like nonprofit or governmental agencies that also can sometimes help. In the time that I've been involved in the baby loss community, the websites and the online support has really grown tremendously. And I think if moms and dads live in a rural area, online communities can be an amazing and invaluable resource for them, for sure.
Good.
Yeah. I will say that there's this really great organization that I belong to, Pregnancy Loss and Infant Death Alliance. Mm-hmm. That's an international perinatal, you know, sort of bereavement organization that helps the practitioners, and it helps also the parents. And I go to this, they have a conference, International Perinatal Bereavement Conference, every 2 years. And it's so good for the practitioners to go to find out what's new and what do we know different than we knew a couple of years ago, and to really keep up on the best evidence-based treatments, trauma approaches, those kinds of things.
Right. Wow. It sounds like a tremendous amount of information that's so helpful to practitioners. But then also, too, you're mentioning these websites, and it's so critical for survivors of this type of loss. So it's wonderful to know that there's great resources like that. So oftentimes, people don't even know where to begin and where to search for compassion and support and communion with other people that understand the loss. So to be able to have that kind of information is so helpful, and just validating.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, because you really feel like you're going through your own little crazy, and you don't feel normal. And that's, you know, really kind of to go back to really your original question that I got very off of.
Well, that's okay. That, all great information.
Is really what parents, you know, need. And they need to not feel so isolated, right? They need to absolutely feel like they are not alone, that other people have also gone through this. They need to, you know, either with inside of a group or with a therapist, they need to process their trauma and their grief. That, you know, one thing that we say about perinatal loss is that it's always a traumatic grief. It's never just a plain old just grief. Like, I feel sad, I'm going through this, like, kind of like coming apart with this person, but it's always mixed in with a very traumatic experience. And so the trauma kind of makes the grief more difficult for the folks, and the grief makes the trauma more difficult. And that combination is really, you know, as Therese Rando says, I love her. She says it's a volatile combination, and it really is.
That's
so their brains and their emotions are just sort of being attacked by the experience. That in a pregnancy loss, no matter what it is, whether it's an early miscarriage or whether it's a later stillbirth, parents are really grieving their expectations of their future. And really, because they've had all this, you know, the minute moms become pregnant, we are going ahead in our brains and we are like, okay, my kid will be this age when I'm this age, and then they'll be in kindergarten. And then if they're always going ahead. So that little person that's growing inside of them, they've got, moms and dads already have lots of plans for that little baby.
Exactly.
And so, right, generally not just an idea. Sometimes women, I do want to say this, sometimes in a miscarriage situation, some women do and can experience it as more clinically, like it's tissue, there was something probably wrong with it, and they can kind of reason their way through it, and they don't have a lot of maybe grief through it. I've definitely seen that, and it can happen for some women for sure, but a lot of women experience it as the loss of an actual baby. And so every person is really different and there's really no right or wrong. But what I do see is that sometimes that can change. So sometimes if you're very kind of logical and you go, well, this is just tissue and it was meant to be, and you kind of go into that mode. Sometimes sure. With some time, once it settles in a little bit longer, you really start to feel like, hey, I feel a little differently about that than I did to begin with. And actually I'm feeling more sad than I thought I would feel. Uh-huh. And that's okay too, right? Uh-huh. Wherever they're at in the process, they need to have space and a safe place to really kind of work through all that.
Yes. Yes. And I can imagine that you create a wonderful holding environment for them to be able to process that. I know you do because you're an incredibly compassionate therapist, and people are very fortunate to work with you with your expertise and your compassion. So I think that goes a long way, having a real solid professional relationship with a therapist, and to have this kind of practice expertise, there's such a profound need. And you speak to something too, where, you know, a lot of people will ask, well, geez, how long is this going to take to heal from this? Because it's awful. It hurts. And it just feels like it's going on forever. And like you said, there are going to be periods of time in a woman's life where they're comparing how old their child would be if their baby had lived, or something along those lines. So it's sort of like perpetual grief or cyclical grief. It kind of comes in stages and cycles. And if someone were to ask, how long is it going to take to heal from this? How would you respond to that?
Well, you know, it really is, like you said, it's cyclical and it's stagey, and it really is, grief is really a roller coaster for sure. Mm-hmm. Any kind of grief is a roller coaster, but in particular, this kind of traumatic grief is an absolute roller coaster. And we can't really say how long it takes. It really, really, really does depend on the person. Mm-hmm. And I would say this is also why there's a really, in a perfect world, if a person goes through a pregnancy loss, they would be in counseling as well as group therapy, because in group therapy or group support, you meet with other people, you're talking about your experience, but in individual, you really can focus in on the really particular parts of your specific pain, because everyone comes into the situation with their own history of grief and loss, their own history of trauma, your own personality structure. There's research now about this kind of, like, we have this natural resiliency set point where some people just kind of are, their brains are sort of more naturally resilient than other folks. Mm-hmm. How long it takes depends on also your social support system. If you have an amazing social support system who allows you to talk about your baby, allows you to be in your process versus, I don't want to talk about it, you should already be over this, stop crying about it, let's move on. That is a very different experience, and it's very painful when your social support system is not there for you. Uh-huh. So it can take a little longer.
Sure.
And then also, you know, as you really know, part of a perinatal loss, we oftentimes forget, pardon me, that the mom who has lost a baby either has delivered a baby that has already passed away or will pass away. But the mom is in the postpartum period. And we often forget that. We think of moms in the postpartum period as, you know, nursing their babies, taking care of their babies. Well, the women that I work with that have perinatal loss, they're in the postpartum period, but they just aren't taking care of living children. But they also have the hormonal fluctuations, the rash, all the hormones, all the chemicals, all of everything that's happening, plus their healing from either a C-section or a vaginal birth. And so there's lots of things happening. Their milk is coming in and they don't have a baby to feed. Right. So moms may have postpartum depression.
That's true. That's a good point.
Along with their grief. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it's really kind of, it can be a little troublesome to, as a practitioner sometimes, to figure out, is this grief or is this postpartum depression? But mm-hmm. if you have the experience and the training, you can get there. And right. there's some overlap too. But so all those things are going to really matter in terms mm-hmm. of how long it takes to heal. But I always say the first year is hard for its own reasons. You're mm-hmm. going through your first year of firsts. You're going through, you know, your first holiday, Christmas, those kinds of things.
Right.
Holidays without your kids, your first Halloween when little kids are coming to your door. And you think, oh my gosh, I was planning on, you know, dressing my child up as a pumpkin and now all these other kids are coming to my door. And you're going through your first year of getting other people's baby announcements mm. and, you know, getting invited to baby showers. And it's very, very painful and you're going through it. But the second year is also challenging because you're going through those experiences, but you don't have the numbness of your shock. You know, mm-hmm. when you go through this to begin with, you're in shock and
right.
you're kind of numb to the experiences. So the second year, boy, you're going through those things, but you're going through them without the numbness. And mm. so it can sometimes be more painful and the social support is generally not there. People mm. are not checking up on you still.
Right.
Pardon me. They're not saying, I'm thinking about you. They're thinking you should be done with this already.
Mm-hmm. So that second year is
real tough.
It's a vulnerable time for sure. And it's something for people that have sustained perinatal loss to be aware of, is that numbness and sort of frozenness that's part of the trauma of the loss, it dissipates and it thaws and things become more raw in that second year. So it becomes that much more important for people to be plugged into psychotherapy and support groups. And that leads me to my next question, and you're giving us such wonderful information. What questions should a person ask to determine if a therapist they're working with is really qualified to help them with this type of loss and trauma?
Yeah, so that's a really great question. So I would say, number one, I tend to believe in a person's gut instinct, your mm-hmm. intuition. So mm-hmm. I think that that's such a huge piece of it. So when you are calling up a therapist, and I'll kind of give you some criteria what to look for instead of okay. just calling everybody randomly, but really tuning in to your intuition of how you feel when you're talking with that person really matters.
Mm-hmm.
So if you feel like already at the outset in a phone call, that person is not, you're not clicking with that person, that's just something, it's not necessarily, you know, hanging the phone up, but just be aware of that and just
yeah.
be aware of how you're feeling. Is this feeling like a good connection or is this feeling like, wow, they're not even letting me finish my sentence?
Mm.
You know, so all those things are just kind of tune into your own gut of how you feel. And everybody's front. The main thing is that therapists are people too, right? Mm. So we're our own people with our own personalities, and someone may really like my personal style and my personality, but I may really turn someone else off.
Mm.
And that's okay. We just have different styles. But in terms of like the professional piece of it and the education and piece of it, it's really helpful to find someone who has experience, training, education, and also has experience working with folks with postpartum mood and anxiety disorders for sure,
mm-hmm.
And traumatic grief. They don't necessarily have to be perinatal loss specialists. I mean, in a perfect world, a client would find somebody like that. If you can
right.
find someone who says, I have specialized training in perinatal loss, that would be awesome. Still call them and see how you feel, but that would be ideal.
Okay.
Is if they said, I deal with people with pregnancy loss, I deal with people that have had stillborn babies, neonatal deaths, anything like that, that would be good. But really, traumatic grief is an important piece in the postpartum, but also postpartum anxiety and depression, you know, we call them postpartum mood and anxiety disorders, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those therapists sometimes can be good, but sometimes they also feel a little scared to mm-hmm. deal with parents who've lost babies. It can be a little bridge too far because, you know, as we know, part of being a therapist is that you have to empathize, and partly in empathy, we have to think about what that would feel like for us. And if we have our own young children,
uh-huh.
and I know I've had to say no sometimes to people that have had deaths of children that were my own age, and
mm-hmm.
I just thought, you know what, it would be too difficult for me. I would have
sure.
too much countertransference that I wouldn't stay focused on them. I would keep thinking probably about how that would be for me. So mm-hmm. I think that all matters. And we have to rely on the therapist to be able to say yes or no to cases, right?
Absolutely. And having that really ethical boundary and knowing when there might be countertransference and knowing when to refer. That's critical. It really is. But definitely also sounds like somebody who's nuanced in traumatic loss could be very helpful. And certainly having the intersection with the perinatal mood and anxiety disorders training. It's both are specialties unto themselves, but the intersection of them both, very, very much a specialty. Do you find that trauma-informed modalities like EMDR are beneficial for this kind of loss moving forward? Or what kind of modalities do you feel are most helpful for clients?
Yeah, you know, that's such a great question. I think actually EMDR, you know, I have not used EMDR with my clients, but I think that, I actually, that's a good question. I don't really know the answer to, but I would say that probably what I know about it is that it would actually be incredibly beneficial, especially if the client is really, really kind of stuck in an area of the, so, you know, as they're going through this grief experience, oftentimes they have pieces of the grief experience where the nurse said something to them or the doctor said something to them, or there was some kind of reaction in the labor and delivery room that was really terrifying to them. Uh-huh. And they cannot get unstuck from that experience. Huh. So in that situation, EMDR would probably be amazing for that. Okay. I find that just sort of doing the grief therapy with them and really letting them talk and process and integrate the feelings with the experience is helpful. But I would say for sure, if they were really stuck on something, I would refer for EMDR for sure.
Mm-hmm. And I can imagine just what you are doing is more than enough, having that opportunity to have a client narrate their story and have it witnessed and validated takes so much of the trauma out of it. And certainly having it witnessed and heard by someone who's a specialist who can really understand what that experience might have been like for that person and allow them to maybe have some psychoeducation on what happened so that it lowers any sense of anxiety in the aftermath and, you know, owning their story of what they've experienced. So what you do is incredible.
You make a really good point, if I can just say also that the psychoeducation piece is huge with this, right? Okay. Because really parents that are going through it, they are like shocked in the woods with no compass, right? Mm. And they don't know what is normal. They don't know what they're supposed to do. And oftentimes our society does not know how to do grief very well. Our society and our culture is kind of messed up and turned around. We don't even know if we should cry, we shouldn't cry, what should we be doing? And so giving them the tools and saying, here's what we know works, and here's what I have seen, and here's what can be for you. Uh-huh. And kind of holding out hope for them, holding onto the hope for them that they can't hold on to yet is huge.
I think that's so important. Having hope for things to be better is so critical when someone are in that deep, dark abyss of mourning and in profound grief, losing the most important connection they could ever have with a child. So, you know, I think having that hope is holding that hope is important. And that also leads me to my next question of what words of wisdom and encouragement do you have for people going through this type of loss? And it sounds like hope is a huge piece of that.
Hope is a huge piece. And so in the hope, I think that it feels like when you're in it, that the grief is literally going to kill you, that it's literally going to swallow you up, that if you start actually feeling your feelings, that it will literally kill you. And that if you start crying about it, you'll never stop. But I think that what we know is that here's the thing, you've already actually experienced the most difficult piece of it. You've already actually experienced the actual baby dying, and you've already gone through it, and you did it, and you survived that. Now what you're going through is the feelings, and you can definitely do that, because if you've already gone through the actual death and the losing your child and having that child taken away from you, you can definitely go through the feelings that are related to it. And it's so important to see other parents who are 6 months down the road, 1 year down the road, 2 years, 3 years down the road, and what their lives look like. If you can see those people and those parents and those families that have full, beautiful, amazing lives, most of them with other children that they've had subsequent babies and subsequent children that grow up to be amazing and healthy family units, you will also know that you can do it too. Because there's not something extra special necessarily about those families. They're not like, you know, grief experts. They're just regular families that this trauma happens to, and they've gotten through it. So they really are your role models. They really are your inspiration. And if you reach out, I mean, you will absolutely survive this. And there will be a time in your life. You can't imagine it in the beginning, but you definitely can imagine it as time goes on, that you will be able to think about your baby. And maybe you'll cry a little bit, but you'll also be able to smile. You'll have a range of feelings. In the beginning, all you have is excruciating pain. But as time goes on, you actually start to think, oh my gosh, I had this amazing little person, this amazing little baby, and they came into my life, and you can smile about it. And so that is powerful.
Yes, it sounds incredibly hopeful for survivors to know that they can move through the excruciating pain and be in a different chapter of their lives where they can actually enjoy life again. And even though they have to integrate the loss and synthesize it and weave it into their daily life and living, that it doesn't remain so intense or charged like it was at the very beginning. And I think what you have to say as relates to that is incredibly powerful, because it's such a feeling of being lost and in a horrible abyss of pain and suffering. So to be able to know that they're not going to be stuck there, that there will be lightness of being again, is huge. But also coming from, you know, a therapist who works with people dealing with a specific kind of loss, that means a lot, I think, to survivors, because you've also seen other clients go through this and live to tell the tale and thrive again. So I think that's incredibly powerful for clients. And it's Yeah, it's great that there are people like you doing this kind of work. And you talked a little bit about the support groups and the organizations that are available for further information and support. Can you repeat that again for our listeners so we can have that kind of information out there for them?
Oh, sure. So first of all, the book that I prefer, that I really, really like, in the hospital that I do a lot of work with, Hope Hospital in Newport Beach, they actually also give it to their patients that go through hearing loss. It's called Empty Cradle, Broken Heart, and it's by Deborah L. Davis. And this book is very helpful for practitioners, very helpful for the patients themselves. And what you do with that book is you just kind of go through it a piece at a time. Whatever you're sort of dealing with, you go to that piece in the book. And it helps you through it. And it is an incredible resource. So I would start there if someone's looking for a kind of a book, an all-around book. That's a great one.
Wonderful.
There's also a really wonderful book by Tim Nelson called A Guide for Fathers When a Baby Dies. And it's this little tiny pocketbook. And it's amazing. That really addresses the needs and the issues specific to men who are going through this as well.
Wonderful. They're often overlooked.
I would say, definitely overlooked. I mean, you know, men will go through this perinatal loss and people will say to them, how is your wife doing? And it's like they're literally invisible. And, you know, men do experience this differently. They usually go back to work quicker. They do experience it differently, but they are having their own pain. They are usually trying to hang in and be rocks for their partners. And so they definitely have their own issues that come around with this, and are holding it together for their wives and trying to stay strong. But then, you know, they're just kind of swallowing their emotions. So
true.
There's a couple of great websites, Still Standing and Faces of Loss and Share. But there's also a really amazing, it's a website and a movie called Return to Zero. And I would also recommend that's a really wonderful narrative story on a couple going through stillbirth experience, but they also have a website and kind of an organization attached to that. That's also incredibly helpful. But if you're kind of starting from square one, I would refer you to the hospital social worker and just see if the local hospital near you has resources for you and start there. You could also always contact me and I can help you connect with people in your area.
Wonderful. How do we get in touch with you and what's your website and how can people get connected with you?
My website, my name is Laura Navarro Pickens and my website is therapistlaura.com. And I'm in the Newport Beach area of Southern California, but I do know people who are all around the country and in other countries also who do this work, and I'd be happy to connect you with those people.
Wonderful. You have just given us so much incredible information that's so helpful, and really appreciate your being here today. I'll just add one more resource. Both Laura and I have been volunteers for Postpartum Support International, and that's postpartum.net. And that's also a wealth of information as well that can connect people and resources. But Laura, thank you so much for being a part of this conversation and contributing to the growing body of knowledge and support and resources that are available to people during the childbearing years. Your work is incredibly profound and so heartfelt, and your clients are very lucky to work with you. So really appreciate your expertise, really appreciate your time and sharing your wisdom. And I'm glad that clients can also know where to find you in Orange County. One question I have for you too is, do you do phone counseling or like webcam Skype-based counseling for clients?
I do.
Oh, yes, good.
I do. Of course. Yeah. Because some moms can't get out of the house. They're having issues. And absolutely, I do, for sure.
Fabulous. So California people, you know where to find Laura, and very exciting. Thank you so much for your time, Laura. I really appreciate your expertise and sharing your wisdom with us today.
Oh gosh, it was my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you again for listening to The Savvy Shrink. For more information about this podcast, go to thesavvyshrink.com. or visit my website at AndreaSchneiderLCSW.com. This is your host, Andrea Schneider. Until next time.